You're listening to a podcast from 702.
That one. Crispin Peary is my guest. He's spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice straight after this.
702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
9 minutes after 11 o'clock. Crispin, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your time, sir.
Good morning, Aubrey, and good morning to our 702 listeners.
So there are three gender-based violence bills that may become law by August. What are those bills?
Firstly, it's the Criminal Law Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Bill.
Yeah.
And this bill seeks to amend the provisions which grant bail to persons who have committed offences against vulnerable persons.
Yeah.
Vulnerable persons in this instance would be defined as women, people with disabilities, and also young people, children in the main. It also seeks to look at how such individuals, if necessary, how the parole placement should take place. The second one is the Domestic Violence Amendment Bill. That one seeks to regulate the definitions of offences. As I've just mentioned now, for instance, the definition of what a vulnerable person is.
Yeah.
This is the type of bill that would really address that. But it also further seeks to facilitate the obtaining of protection orders against domestic violence. One of the things that a lot of activists and people in the space have said is that the protection order in and of itself is just sometimes a piece of paper,
yeah,
and it's not necessarily that effective. And for instance, it doesn't cross provincial borders. So if I get a protection order against you in Gauteng,
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily apply in Limpopo. So those are the type of things that the domestic violence amendment bill.
Oh, so that's the case. So if the protection order is issued here in Gauteng, it probably doesn't work in another province?
Yeah.
That's weird.
One of the things that have been brought to the attention. But also trying to get an electronic system. So that's essentially it. So it would have an electronic system that wherever you are, it's not just a piece of paper that protection order can be enforced.
What was the
final one?
Just before you go to the final one, Chris, I'm really interested in what was the reason for not universalizing the court order, the protection order?
It's a jurisdiction issue. So because it would be issued by a specific court, then that court has jurisdiction over a particular area. So it's almost an unintended consequence.
Yes.
Of other laws that then impact on the enforceability of this particular protection order.
Okay, the third one, yeah?
It's one that I think a lot of people have interest in, and we've seen a lot of petitions around this. It's the National Register for Sexual Offenders.
Mm.
So the status quo currently with that list is that it's only applicable to people who have committed a sexual offense a sexual crime against people who are disabled or children.
Yeah.
So this bill extends that list. If you have committed a sexual crime against anyone, you will now be on that list. And then it also further regulates the removal of particulars of people who are on that list. So it would take an extremely long time for one to be removed off that list. I think it's in excess of 25 years.
So
those are the three bills that will be placed before Parliament after Cabinet has had a good look at them and have really looked at them and think that they are in a pristine condition to be presented to Parliament.
Yeah. I suppose Parliament and the Department need to be commended for this, but why has it taken so long, Crispin?
It hasn't taken so long. I think these bills have actually come to Cabinet as of from September last year. These bills have been in the pipeline and now we see them coming through to Cabinet. But we must also not forget that in addition to this bill, we've already passed a law now which removes prescription for sexual offences. So if a sexual offence was committed against someone, say, in 1979, that offence is not prescribed, whereas the law previously was that there was a 20-year time bar on sexual offences. Now that is no longer the case.
Often I hear that question being raised by some people that, yeah, but why now? Why do you raise the issue of you having been violated, raped 20 years ago? Why didn't you speak then? And usually people don't appreciate the issues that go with that kind of violation, and the difficulty of coming out, because, you know, often people just don't believe you. You're worried about being believed. So I'm glad to hear that this idea of an offense like that doesn't prescribe, because it doesn't prescribe even in the mind of the victim. Yeah.
Not only that, Opie, most of the time, in such cases, such an offense is committed against the child.
Even
when the child reports the crime to an adult, they often are not believed. And so even in our own communities, we then create barriers to justice. So we think that at least in removing a time prescription period, that barrier is somewhat removed, and you still have an opportunity once you are of a major age to raise it to the criminal justice system, and then the criminal justice system can ensure that justice is done. So these are some of the measures that we intend to introduce. But quite correctly, in the introduction of your show, I think you highlighted that the problem is not necessarily the fact that we don't have laws in place or people are reporting the crimes a lot more. The problem is simply us men. Women are not safe, I often say, in the bathroom. Women are not safe in the kitchen. Women are just not safe anywhere. And the point is they're not safe from us. And one thing that we need to look at is how we also then socialize our communities. One of the issues that you do raise is how do we treat women as humans, first of all? Let alone, let's forget the question of equality, but part of this is this, the lack of humanity from us men. And one of the things that the minister also will be looking into through the Inter-Ministerial Committee on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide is how we can also introduce changes in the curriculum from a school point of view, so that at least in our education curriculum, we substantively, at least proactively, address this issue of gender-based violence. But it's not the only space where this needs to happen. In our initiation schools, where we are told that we are men, we should be told that you are not a man if you beat up a woman, or if you, in fact, just use violence to solve any problem. I think that's perhaps the third leg that's problematic in our society, that we generally rely on violence to solve anything in our society. And we are seeing it, you know, in various manifestations, not just in gender-based violence, but in various manifestations of our society, we are seeing the effects of us being a violent society. And then follows that the most vulnerable in our society would then bear the brunt of that violence.
Crispin Peary is my guest, spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice. We're looking at three bills that are going to become law by August, hopefully, should the deliberations in cabinet not delay the process. And Crispin, I must agree with you. I think that is the single most important thing that our generation of humanity as a project has as a project, and that is to discover our humanity beyond our labels. We've done very well over the last few centuries to solidify ideas around categories and labels. The biggest, single, most important thing that this generation has is to reconnect with our humanity. So I absolutely agree with you. What was it in the creation of these bills that prompted the creation of these bills? Was it the outcry from women's groups or anybody that is, you know, talking the language of humanity as you and I have been having it now? Or was there an internal process within the Department of Justice that looked at these laws independently of the outcries, that looked at these laws, found some of the problems, like, for example, the non-universalization of the application of the protection order, for example. Where did the motivation to change and come up with these bills come from? Did it come from internally, or was it as a result of outside pressure?
I think it's an ongoing process. We have Department of Justice. We have what we call a unit called legislative development, and that's what they look at. So it's a push and pull type of relationship. Society will often complain of the efficacy of a specific piece of legislation, and then we are required to really look at whether this legislation is actually achieving the intended consequences. Or even the state in and of itself will discover that actually this is not as effective as we want it to be, and maybe we should look at amending it here and there. But you would also recall that, of course, the gender-based violence and femicide summit that was held, I think, approximately 2 years ago, was also quite informative for society around how we see gender-based violence manifesting itself, and also how, unfortunately, the criminal justice system, in a way, has somewhat exacerbated the problem.
Yeah.
And so this is also in response to that, to try and correct some of the things that the criminal justice system unintendedly exacerbates. And that's the thinking behind it in the main. So we are eternally grateful, of course, to many activists who continuously advocate for change in the space and are practitioners in a way of resolving this problem. Their insights are invaluable to us making the legislation a lot more better and a lot more practical.
Yeah. A question from a listener on Twitter, Katleho Komo, says, let's say I accuse someone of a sexual crime. Then the court finds that person not guilty, or I'm being accused of a sexual crime, rape, and the court finds me not guilty. Will the accused name be on the sexual crime list?
No, because you're accused. You're not sentenced. Only sentenced people find themselves on the National Register for Sexual Offences.
Yeah. Well, Gail just sent me a message on the WhatsApp line and, just talks about a very practical thing that perhaps we need to think about as society. But I'll put it to you because obviously it's coming to us while we're having this conversation. Gail says, hi, Aubrey and guest. My constant worry with being attacked in a bathroom is at shopping malls. They are mostly empty these days. I suppose because of the COVID-19 restrictions and so forth. Says they are mostly empty these days. Why do management always insist on putting the ladies' bathrooms way at the end? Surely that's asking for trouble, asks Gail.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Maybe those are the practical suggestions that we can bring in public spaces. How are spaces more friendlier to women? For instance, not just the bathroom example. Many of my colleagues often say, I'm scared to leave the office late at night and go into the parking lot because I don't know what could be lurking there. So there are many things that we collectively as a society need to start thinking about. So how do we make our society more friendlier for women so that women can feel safe in public spaces?
Yeah.
But again, the nature of these crimes, you could go to the post office as we have seen in recent history.
Yeah.
And even there, you could never come back.
Absolutely. And I think that the whole idea behind women's toilets being sort of remotely is probably got something to do with the idea that you want to give them as much privacy as possible or something like that. And it works against women, I suppose, in the way that Gail is describing, because maybe you want to, have the toilet further away because you imagine that is more private, but you're then exposing women to predation, I suppose, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. We'd want to have maybe a psychologist and anthropologist maybe have a look at how we create structures in society.
Yeah. Tell me, is that part of the process, Crispin, as the department looks at certain laws or suggestions for laws? I'm talking about, bills. Do you bring in, disciplines like anthropologists, psychologists, socialists, sociologists to help you come up with bills that have had those issues considered?
From a correctional services point of view, one of the things that we are looking at is the offenders of gender-based violence who find themselves in our facilities. We have to look at analyzing the reasons why they're there. In fact, their rehabilitation programs should be structured along the lines of expert advice from psychologists, criminologists, and maybe where possible, even anthropologists. So that's something that we're looking at from the criminal justice. From the correctional services point of view. But however, from the bills process, you would recall that writing of a bill does not automatically make it law. It still goes out to the public for comment. And we would hope that people with such expertise can actually delve into the bill and actually then say make further recommendations to the bill. So Cabinet comes up essentially with a framework of what it thinks legislatively could be possible. But that can always be enhanced by society. And that's why we are a participatory democracy, which allows people various skills and disciplines to really enhance the product of the executive before it becomes the product of society.
Kirsty asks the question, will being on a sexual offenders list be enough? Surely there's need for more reform in terms of social workers, psychologists, etc. for the offenders, says Kirsty.
Yeah, certainly, and that's why I'm saying in our correctional facilities, in addition to one being in the one of the rehabilitation programs is to really delve in and work closely with psychologists, criminologists, as well as, like I said, where necessary, if the need arises, from anthropologists as well.
Yeah. Doug says, hi, Aubrey. I'm a male who grew up with a mom, stepsister, stepmom, and have had a few girlfriends and had my wife for 40 years. I take exception to being included to the disgusting males who are out there. To the men who fall into that category, if the cap fits, then so be it, says Doug. How do you respond to Doug?
Well, this idea of not all men or not all whites are racist that's not the point.
Yeah.
99% of the time it's men who commit these offenses. And yes, some do believe that women are equal and treat women well. But the point is, systemically, we live in a patriarchal society. So even if you grew up with a single parent or who's a female, chances are you are still superior to that person because society grants you some male privilege.
Yeah.
And I think that's also some of the things that we need to confront.
Yeah.
So this idea of not all really doesn't work. I think we all have to internally look at our society as a whole, and it might not be intrinsic in your home alone, but it might be happening next door.
Yeah.
And the more we're able to have these conversations with each other, we're then able to debunk the myths of masculinity and so on that we are brought up to believe.
Yeah. I think one should be concerned about when you feel the need to be defensive in any conversation about injustice. So whether it's racism, sexism, any form of injustice, when you feel a certain level of being accused, when you know you are not participating in that, should really worry you, I think. Because what is it that you are feeling liable for in this conversation that you feel you need to defend yourself? What do you think of that observation?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one. I take your point. But I think we should also, my view is when someone says not all, that's the equivalent of saying, no, I'm not racist, I have black friends.
Yeah.
It's a systemic issue. You have to look at it. It's not about you. Remove yourself from the center of this thing and really ask yourself, but what is it about our society that leads to us having such individuals? And that's why the government also says quite often, government's collective messages, gender-based violence is not a state problem per se, but it's a societal problem. All of us have to be invested in a solution around gender-based violence. It's not only for the state to develop laws, but everyone, like racism. We have laws that have outlawed racism, but yet still we still find people who find it easy to call other people derogatory names and treat people in a derogatory manner. You know, so like inequality, even though we call for society to be equal and we call for certain reforms across the board, we still have a society that's greatly unequal. So these are societal problems.
Mm.
And if you accept the premise that women are often found at the bottom, proverbially speaking, of the food chain, they will bear the brunt of this unjust society. But it's not about an individual.
Yeah.
It's not about race, for that matter.
Yeah.
But it's really about a collective thinking about society. And I sometimes say it's about consciousness.
Ah, absolutely. Crispin, I want to thank you very much, my brother, for just letting us know about these bills. And we watch with much interest, and we do hope that what seems to be an expedition of the process, I really hope that it actually becomes a reality. I want to thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Crispin Peary, spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice. It's an interesting conversation, this personalization of a systemic issue, yeah. I think we need to ask ourselves some deep questions, you know, whether it's the race conversation or the sexism conversation. Why it is so easy for us to get touched on our studio, as it were, when these systemic issues are being raised and then we personalize them. I think it's a very deep question we need to ask ourselves about our relationship with that particular injustice that is being discussed at that point in time.